As we know, tonight is Yom Yerushalayim, and well, it's tomorrow, but we spoke about that last week. So this week we'll talk about some Inyanei Shavuot, since we won't be meeting next week. It'll be the Yantar of Shavuot. So we'll discuss a little bit about Torah Shabbat Peh and the history behind it. So there's a Gemara in Megillah, it's a famous Chazal that says, Mikra, Mishnah, Agadata, Medrash, and it goes on even to things I never even heard of. Kvar Namro, Mimosha, Nisina. Basically, everything was given already, the whole Torah already was given to Moshe at Sinai. Hafilo Masha Talmud, even any question any student's going to ask, Kvar Namro, Mimosha, Nisinai. So, what exactly does that mean? So, you have Hirsch writes in one of his essays, and it seems to be Rashi's sheet as well, who take a very narrow approach, meaning they take it literally. Yeah, everything was given to, every detail, every law was given, and all our job is in the transmission. I guess according to them, every machlokes is based on a lack of transmission, because if everything was given,
rediscovering what?
Right, there's nothing new under the sun. However, the Rashita Tarambam, which seems to be the normative approach that we take, is that it doesn't mean literally that every detail was given, but it means Bekoach, the potential, all the principles were given to Moshe Rabbeinu Har Sinai.
Rambam Maimonides,
and to every generation, every Beis Din, and future generations to come and darshan and see how they see fit. Like the famous Gemara Menachas on the Afkaf Tet, when God took Moshe Rabbeinu to visit Rabbi Akiva's class, where Akiva was giving shir, and Moshe Rabbeinu felt like us, we walked into shir and no idea what was going on, and Rabbi Akiva's going on, and Moshe's feeling terrible, until someone asked Rabbi Akiva, how do you know that? He says, Halacha la Moshe Misinai. He says, it's from Moshe, and Moshe felt better, but what's the pshat? What, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know his own Torah? So the Mepharshim point out, no, that's what it means, is when they took Moshe Rabbeinu's principles and you take it further and further, so he didn't realize at the time that this Torah was based on the applications later on. We'll give different examples, but it goes back to Moshe Rabbeinu's principles. Rashi learns the Gemara, Olel Amarom, that he took him up before he was given the Torah. That's why he didn't know what was going on.
But that doesn't sound like, if it says all the details, it doesn't say the principles, it says the details.
It doesn't say details.
It's a little subject to say that. I mean, I know logically it makes more sense just to say the he was taught the principles, and then, you know, and then the tools were given.
That's a general...
That's not what the Gemara says.
No, but well, it depends how you learn Gemara. I mean, that's a general machlokas in Gemara, is obviously if the text and the logic was in one direction, you would have a machlokes. Uh-huh. So obviously what the issue is many times is the textually it's mashma one way. That's why some mepharshim go with the text, other mepharshim go with the svara. That's what I'm saying. But there's many times you can't just go by the fact this literal reading of the Gemara. Because many times the literal reading might read one way, but that's not what the Gemara means. But that's how the mepharshim learn that it means the potential. And that's in every generation, it's every future Beis Din to go and darshan. So for instance, we actually spoke about it last week, that there's a mitzvah of Ksivat Sefer Torah. There's a 613th mitzvah in the Torah, is every Jew has a requirement to write their own Sefer Torah.
I come back for a second. So you're saying potential, like the spirit of the law for the room?
No, potential meaning the
potential.
No, potential meaning the principles. All the principles were given to Moshe Misinai, and as we'll see, if you take the same principles and apply it to a different generation, a different society, you'll come out with a different halakha. That, in other words, you know, does halakha change? So it depends what you mean. If you mean by the principles change, then the answer is no. But if I take the same principle and apply it to a different reality, so the bottom line answer is going to change. You could ask me a question. So for instance, let's say, writing, how do you fulfill, you come to me during the time in the Mishnah, how do I fulfill the mitzvah of writing a Sefer Torah? I'll tell you by writing a Sefer Torah. But you come to me now, you tell me, how do you fulfill the mitzvah of writing a Sefer Torah? So the Torah quotes in the Rush, the famous Shita, that Bizman HaZeh, the mitzvah has changed. The mitzvah is to, you buy an art school, you take notes in a shiur, because it says, Kisulachem Ulamdu also. It used to be, Bizman HaMishnah, they didn't have before the printing press, they used to go to shul, take out a Sefer Torah, and that's how people used to learn. The purpose of writing a Torah is to facilitate Torah learning. So today, that people don't use the Sifrei Torah anymore, that this is Sefer Shalkovit. We bring it out of the Aron a couple of times a week, and that's it. But we take Gemaras out and all that. So those are the mitzvah of Sefer Torah. And even though usually you'll ask, we aren't Darshin on time of the Kra. In other words, the question is, normally we don't have a reason limit the scope of the mitzvah. Like the Gemara tells us in Bava Metzia, the Torah says you can't take collateral from a widow. So, and doesn't say why. Presumably because the widow has no money and you want to take a coat or a blanket away. So the Gemara has a discussion. What about if she's a rich widow? She had a nice life insurance policy. She's independently wealthy. Are you allowed to take collateral from a wealthy widow? So Rabbi Yehuda says, no. He says, the Torah says you can't take collateral. That's it. Ain't no darshina in time of the crowd. No reason to take a reason and limit or expand the scope of the mitzvah. And Rav Shimon says, darshina in time of the crowd. Rav Shimon says, yeah, you can take the reason and either limit or expand. So normally, we go with Rabbi Yehuda. We normally assume, ain't no darshina in time of the crowd. We usually don't take the reason and limit the scope of the mitzvah. However, only if the Torah itself gives the reason for the mitzvah. If the Torah itself gives the reason, so then we do take the reason. So since the Torah says, Kisulachem, the mitzvah of writing of Sefer Torah, the purpose is to learn from it, so that's only while I'm learning from a Sefer Torah. But if I'm learning from a Chumash or from a Gemara, so clearly the mitzvah has changed. So that's an example where, I mean, it's the principles were given, but we have to take the principles and continually, I'll be going through this more. Or another example, I spoke about a Minchas Chinuch a couple of weeks ago, also a similar question. Let's say I spoke about a wife of a Kohen who is pregnant. Do we know the halacha of going to a cemetery, coming in contact with the dead, only applies to Bnei Aaron, the low Benos Aaron, only to the men, but the wife of a Kohen, the daughter of a Kohen, she's allowed to go into a cemetery or be in the same room, come in contact with the corpse. So the question is, what about a wife of a Kohen who's pregnant? Is she permitted to go into a cemetery or not? Why? What's the issue? Because maybe she has a boy. So the Shach and the Magen Avraham all quote from the Rokeach, the Rishonim, who say it's permitted based on Svek Sveka, based on the principle of double doubt. One doubt, maybe it's a Zohar, maybe it's a Mekeva, maybe it's a boy, maybe it's a girl. And even if it's a boy, maybe it's a Nathal. Maybe it won't last 30 days, and therefore it won't be a viable child. So all the Achronim quote this Rokeach, that's the halacha, that a Svek Sveka, based on a double doubt, is permitted. So what about today? Let's say we know we have the sonogram today, or during those days, the Navi told you, and that's even assuming for our purposes the sonogram is acceptable on Pialacha. It's pretty accurate these days, and it's always getting better. So let's assume for our purposes we accept it as it's true.
We have one doubt.
So therefore, the Pashas, and if a woman took a sonogram and knew it was a boy, so then Pashas, it'd be usher for the woman to go in. I have to, 100 years ago you told me it was permitted, now it's not. It's the same principle. A doubt regarding a biblical law was strict on, a doubt regarding a rabbinic law we're lenient on, but a double doubt on a biblical law we're lenient on. So 200 years ago, it's always a double doubt. So therefore, the woman was permitted to go in. Today, if she took a sonogram and she knew it was a boy, so based on the principle of subject to right, so you'd have to come up with another reason why to say she'd be permitted to go in. There's a Noda de Yehuda, which raises the question, he doesn't talk about this, but was a woman obligated to take a sonogram? Maybe since it's so easy to take now, maybe Shemavarer, something, we have a principle on any type of doubt, if it's Eshavavarer, if you could, well, I'm not sure if it's kosher, but if you could check, so you check, you don't say, I don't know, if you could check into it, so therefore, if you could check, so maybe a woman's obligated if she wants to go. So the Noda de Yehuda writes, no. Not in this case, but he's only obligated to Mavarer to check it out, if you could check out both doubts. Since you can only mavara one of the two, you can never mavara whether it's going to be a nafil or not. And therefore, he says, then you're not mechayev. So that's what we assume, like the nose of Yehuda, that a woman would not be obligated to take this anagram. That if she did, pashtit, it would be us. There are reasons, there are ways to be mekel also, other based on the separate share. Right? You had a question?
If let's say the kid, let's say it's after he's been born, right? Cohen, goes into the cemetery before it's 30 days old, and retroactively after 30 days, he does the Aveira? Like, how does that work? Why does the 30 days make it another suffix?
Here the case is here a woman's permitted to do it, so therefore the woman's doing everything, she's going in, and if he's being brought in, he can't, if you're saying the Kohen actively now, what the baby calls him, I mean, it wouldn't be an issue anyway because he doesn't know what he's doing anyway. There's no halacha of chinuch, that's more of a marta lahazir gedolim al katanim. So if you have, let's say you have a 3-year-old kid, it's not only limited to tumas kohanim, Hilchas Shabbos. You have a kid sitting there turning the light, which kids do at 3, so you don't have to tell him. He has no idea what he's doing. There's no mitzvah chinuch, so it wouldn't have been to that age. It's only the issue of a cousin shagil chinuch. In other words, you can never actively bring someone in, you know, that's doing a biyadayim. But you don't necessarily have to stop. It's based on chinuch. You don't have to stop a little kid. But the machlokas we've shown him is, if it's a cousin, shegia l'chinuch, if it's your kid, then everyone agrees you have to. If it's your friend's kid, so that's a machlokas rishon, if you have an obligation to stop the 5-year-old, whatever 6-year-old Kohen from walking in the cemetery.
But this child is not, it's a fetus. It's not exposed to, it's developed and not really exposed
very
to
good. Very good. That's the Avnei Meluim's question. The truth be told, what she's raising is the principle. It's a principle called tuma beruah, which is true. That the halacha, if you're totally encased in, the tuma doesn't come out. That's the question they all ask on the rokeach. They say, why do you have to come on to double doubt? It's not a problem anyway. So the Radvaz answers in the rokeach. You're right. Really, it's not a problem at all. You know what the rokeach said it for? For this woman who's 9 months pregnant and she's about to pop open and give birth, and that even she's allowed to go because of course if it's during the regular pregnancy it's not even a question because the fetus is covered. But since maybe she'll say when she's 9 months she can't go because she might give birth, that's okay. Even then she's allowed to outstretch faker. There are other commentators, but they all talk about that question whether tumah beruah applies. But
I mean, when the child is born, it's probably a bigger problem because he's in a hospital where people are dying.
There's
a bigger problem there. Should a wife of a Kohen go into a hospital to deliver a child?
Home birth. They have a separate Kohanim section. No, but obviously you have to do. You know, obviously if it was the case where you could,
What happens when a Kohen gets really sick?
Here you have what's relying because it's a non-Jewish hospital and it gets into other halachas of Tuma. And another question is, when does he become a Kohen? Somebody doesn't become a Kohen until he's actually born. So it's not even a shayla at all in the fetus because he's just a czar. It's a Gemara in Yavamas that he doesn't get the status, the daddy-son relation doesn't begin until birth, so then perhaps the shayla doesn't even come off. But either way, even after a sonogram, there are many who are still makel. The minig is anyway, even any pregnant woman doesn't go to a cemetery, even if you're not a Kohen, it's just a minig, because birth represents life and the cemetery represents death. So practically speaking, the minig of any pregnant woman is not to go to a cemetery, but Maker as in, there's no problem for a wife of a Kohen, even if she's pregnant, to go in. Is there a question? Yes, so...
He's just trying to work up this thing with the nafil. I mean, the fact is that what you're saying is that for a kid under 30 days,
it's a fetus, though.
No, we're talking about... That's
what you're making. He might be a stillborn.
No, but the point is, no, it's up to 30 days. What you're coming up with is a 30-day, or a baby under 30 days old, right, is not, it doesn't have the din of a Kohen. When you have a din of a Kohen, it seems to imply you have to be... that's what's interesting about this, is that the suffix is that he's a nafel. Why should
that
affect anything?
No, but I don't know if he's saying it. He's still. It shouldn't affect the Kohen status.
He's not
a suffer Kohen. Once he's born, he is a Kohen. But since he might be a nafel, so the effort was never a shiloh to begin with. It's one doubt whether it's a boy. Maybe it's a, even if it's a boy. But even if the person he's a Kohen, but if he dies, he's nothing. I'm saying it's not a question. No one says he doesn't become a Kohen until 30 days later. In fact, we do a Brit Mila on day 8. Right. So clearly, obviously, he has the status of Chai L'chol Dover and stuff like that. I mean, obviously, there's a difference between a fetus before and then once the child is even one day old in terms of...
Ultimately,
you can't kill a 7-year-old baby.
So the fetus dies, never has a dead Kohen. I mean, what you're saying is that
Uber is, Uber b'mei mozarhu.
Right, so therefore that's the whole question of why you even have to go on to
it. Right, that's the Gemara in Yavam, that's right. Right, that's what some say.
Right.
The question is why would the Rekeach have to come on to... Obviously the Rekeach doesn't seem to be learning that, or else why does he have to come on to Svek Sveka for?
Yeah, even the Svek Sveka, the nafel part seems to be a problem. Because the nafel... So what's an Efgemin if it's a nafel or not?
That allows him to go in.
The point is, you say there's a suffix.
Yeah.
Okay, you're saying there's a suffix, boy or girl, because a boy, the Mitchell fights to a girl, doesn't it?
Right.
They say the second suffix is whether it's a nafel or not a nafel.
Right.
The implication is that if it's a nafel, even if he says it might be dead already. That's the point. It's not that it might be dead already. That's what he means over there. Not that he could die, because what's enough for me to be could die?
Once you're born, there's no difference anymore.
Right. I think he must mean that the kid is dead already. You just didn't know.
And that can't be Mavara. Right. That gets into the nose of you. This question: then, if you can Mavara,
right,
if the kid's
right,
in April or not?
But back then, they had no way to Mavara.
So the effort.
When you said that the more normative position was the Rambam's position.
On which point?
When you said about the big machlokas.
Right.
Okay. I just want you to know.
Not in yeshiva circles,
it's a machlokas between YU and yeshiva. Though. Every person from YU ever spoke to always quotes the Rambam and says, Rashi, I understand. And everyone I respect to, almost people from yeshiva though, it's always Rashi, and it's a Rambam, I understand.
So you're saying that YU is not part of the yeshiva belt.
No.
I want to understand that.
I'm not using it, I'm going to get a problem.
He's being descriptive.
I heard in this part of the time, you'd be very careful what you say. I'm not saying it anymore. When you said that, it just hit me that you said the more normative.
No, right. I mean, the more obvious explanation. Right. It's very difficult to say that every.
But from the perspective of the Sfora, it makes sense. Like you explained, it's beautiful. But from the perspective of the text, it's very problematic.
Who said that?
He doesn't mention Rashi by name, but
he says to anyone who holds that machlokas can come up and forgot.
Exactly. He's saying every machlokas in the Gemara is based on basically you lost the transmission. Then that's the whole development of the Torah. That's the whole Rambam. The whole Rambam in the beginning of Akdama to Mishnah.
Right.
In the Brachas, and in the beginning of Mishnah Torah.
Right.
He has his whole Abdomi, he goes through the whole development of Torah Shabbat Peh, right. So, right, to me it seems very difficult not to like the Rambam, let me go explain more elaborately on the Rambam. So, there's a whole discussion that the Kesef Mishnah quotes about whether he did. We know there's a question whether could Amoraim argue on Tanaim. Amoraim, the rabbis of the Gemara, could they argue with the rabbis of the Mishnah?
No,
they can't. All right, so that's what the Ketzer of Mishnah says they can't. But he seems to say he doesn't. In other words, he seems to bring that to the Minig. But is that true or not? So there's a Torah Tamima on Parshas Lech Lecha based on the Gemara in Sanhedrin that we know there are three stages. We have a tradition. There are 6,000 years and it's split into three. The first 2,000 years is Tohu Vavohu, this Tohu voidness. From 2,000 to 4,000 are the years of Torah, and from 4 to 6 are the years of the Mashiach. So we know what happened. Avraham Avinu was born in 1948, the Hebrew year, and 52 years later, Vahanefesh Asherasu Bacharan, that's when he started spreading Torah. That was from 2,000 to 4,000. What's the significance of the year 4,000? I mean, no more Torah. What are we doing now? We're not learning anymore? Like, what does that mean? From 2,000 to 4,000 is Torah. The end of the year is the Torah. So the Torah Tamima, he wants to claim, and Rabbi Akiva clearly didn't have this tradition. Why? Because he thought Bar Kokhba was the Melech HaMashiach. You know, and at that point maybe a good reason to think so. But he thought, and the rabbis told him, he said, grass is going to be growing on your grave, grass is growing on your forehead, long before the Mashiach comes. Because they had the tradition the Mashiach wasn't coming before the year 4,000. So the Torah Tamima writes, what's the significance of the year 4,000? So he claims that's about the time where Yehuda HaNasi, that's about the time he passed away, and that's the cutoff point of the Tanam. So the Torah Tamima claims this is the basis of it. He says, it's true, Amoraim cannot argue on Tanam because the year 4,000 basically is the time period of the end of the Tanam and the beginning of Amoraim. That's what it means, it's the end of Torah, that Amoraim have no right to argue with the Tanam.
The Yehuda HaNasi was around the same time as the Akiva, or a lot after?
Well, Rabbi Akiva was about 70 years after Korban Bayis Sheni.
It's about
100
years. It was 100 years after Rabbi Akiva. Roughly. 90 years.
So that's the Torah Tamima writes, that Amorama Usher to argue with Tanam. However, there's a big problem with that because Rav Chaim brings it down, Rav Achanan Wasserman. If you ever learn Gemara, you might have noticed, especially the beginning of Suvis, Rav Tani Vipolig, Rav was an Amora.
They're contemporaneous.
No, not based on what the Torah Tamima is saying. He came after the time period. But first, what he has to say first. Rav Chaim says, Rav Tani Vipolig, we see Rav argued on Tanam, and not only did he argue, we passed him like Rav. So clearly it can't mean that Amoraim don't have a right to argue on Tanam. That's ridiculous.
Is that the only case of an Amoraim?
No, there are other ones. He gives different examples. Rav Achanan, many cases, brings out with the Amoraim, so therefore, what do you mean Amoraim can't? We see they do it all the time. So what is the significance then, if Amoraim can argue with Tanam, so what's the significance of the year 4,000? And according to Torah Tamiba, it's difficult that he says Amoraim can't argue with Tanam, but at least he explains why does no matter what he means, what's the year 4,000? So what's the year 4,000? So based on the Chazon Ish in Hilchos Trefus, they bring down that basically the year 4,000 is basically what's the cutoff period in terms of what's in Hilchos Trefus, the Chazon Ish brings down. Trait is an animal that's going to die within 12 months. So the problem is, there are different animals that Chazal call trafis, yet we see live longer than 12 months. And we see other animals that aren't trafis die before. So what do you do when the halakha calls this animal a trafa, but the reality is it's not a trafa? So the Chazanist deals with that issue. So along in the whole discussion, he gives us the principle. He says, and he quotes, and that's what they tie into the year 4,000, that the definition, Amoraim can argue with Tanam, but in terms of the definition of the definition of Trefa, that was Nikva this time. We can't change the definition. Or let's say, by Kriyashma, we know it says, B'shav v'kal v'klumecha, when you lie down, when you get up. So when's the last time? I mean, you could say Kriya Shema is 3 hours because that's when the kings get up. But I know that many people wake up at much later than that. So what? No, again, so since once the Chazal was Korveya, that's the Kumaka, we can't change it anymore. So, or another example they give is Malacha and Chol HaMoed. There's a whole machlokes whether it's Deraisa, Derabanan. So, because the Gemara has a Russian, Masru HaTorah L'Chachamim. So some people learn it means it's Isser to do Malacha and Chol HaMoed is Derabanan. Others don't say no, it's Deraisa, but the Chachamim were given the definition to define how do you define Malacha and Chol HaMoed. Malacha is an Isser Deraisa and Chol HaMoed. But the definition of Malach on Chol HaMoed is different than the definition of Malach on Shabbos or Yontem. So when's the Koveya? That's what the Chazon is right. The year 4000, what do you mean the end of Torah? That the end of, we can't define anymore. We're that's the given now. This is a trefa that we have to go and work with this definition. But of course Amal Ram can argue with Tanam.
Can.
You know, that's the way we assume. And that, in fact, the Rama writes it in Shulchan Aruch in Choshen Mishpat Timachafei as a long piece. He writes like this: what's the cutoff point? So if Amal Ram can argue on Tanam, so everyone could argue on anyone. I could argue on Rabbo. So what's the cutoff point? So the Rama tells us a very simple cutoff point based on the Gemara Baba Metzia, Ravina v'Ravashi Sof Hora. Ravina and Ravashi are considered Sof Hora, the end of the period of Hohora, and so therefore, the way that the Vilna Gaon writes over there, that basically we assume the cutoff point is Chasimas HaTalmud, when the Talmud was finished. So everyone who was living before Chasimas, up until Rav and Rav Ashi, everyone's fair game. You could attack, anyone could argue one another. Anyone who came after Ravina Rav Ashi, they can no longer argue. So therefore, in theory, I could argue with the Rambam. It might not be prudent, but there's no rule saying I can't. In fact,
for 4,000 years too, Chasimus and Mishnah. You can just say 4,000 ends when the Mishnah was written down. Okay? That's why the year 2000 to 4,000, it ends with the Nazi writing down the Mishnah. That's why 4,000 years is significant, even though you still say that Rav, let's say, argument of Tana. Because of the year 4000, the Mishnah is written down.
No, that's right.
Chasimus and Mishnah. Chasimus and Gemara for the Sofara, so you can use Chasimus and Mishnah for the end of 4000 years.
No, right, I'm saying it's definitely...
I have an answer.
No, right, there's obviously something special about the year 4000, right?
I don't think it's that special if we can continue to argue with them. I think that's the question.
Why is 4,000 years significant if you can still argue with Tanaim? So you can say the reason it said 2,000 and 4,000, that's when the Mishnah was completed.
I know, but if we can still...
That was the Malacha, that's what I'm saying. That's where the definition of Malacha and Chol HaMoed, the definition of Trefa, that was the year 4,000. That's why it's significant.
I think that Chol HaMoed was a different process than by Trefa. By Chol HaMoed, it was given over to Chazal to define the category.
No, right. It's given after the year 4000 was the cutoff. In other words, we can't go ahead now and redefine Chol HaMoed.
So Chazal told the same thing. Defining the times for Kishon was handed over to Chazal. I mean, Chol HaMoed is actually a legislative procedure that defines the direction. The thing I thought, I don't know if it's a Chazanish, but I thought someone else said that. I thought that the difference was the ability to be derish with the Chumash. To determine the halacha straight from the chumash, like the drush of Chazal,
right?
We can't do any drushes anymore.
Right, we lost. Right, that's what I was. Right, it's like the Vilna Gaon. He had the secret where he could open up the chumash and he could read. He could open up the book. He could read parashas Mishpatim and basically have Baba Kama, Baba Metziah. He had the secret, but that's how they used to learn. That's the whole thing about the Talmud Bavli. Right, it was a whole change of limud. So people used to be able just to open up a Sefer Torah and you have all the reading, all the kutot.
That's how the Chazon Ish means by the end of the...
No, I'm not thinking, no, it could be not right. That's not.
Oh,
no. No, that, you're not being choleric on anything. Mm-hmm. I'm saying, no, but that's what he could mean also.
When you said that...
He's saying, and that was the time when they stopped work, and that, you know, we stopped, we don't have the Masorah anymore, how they got all the drushes anymore.
Right.
And so Chaim says our job now is just to understand the Rishonim.
Right.
Because we don't have the Yid Gimel Midrash.
Because
that ended
with the end of the Mishnah.
Right.
Right, that's what he meant, but that ended with the end of the Mishnah is that we don't have the ability. Like, you know, look at Rosh Hashanah. Like, I just saw one. You take a drush, an extra letter, and all of a sudden you figure out a whole lot. You figure out where the heck do they get it? If they get this from?
It's called a Mishnah thing.
So according to the Rambam, where they're actually doing drushes, right, you have to say that they actually, for some reason, had a methodology how they're able to know that this extra letter meant this halacha. And I thought that that was the, divine.
The year 4000, you think? I heard that also. Yeah, saying that was a different time. It was a totally different type of learning, right? So Tom about on one hand they were into Golis, but then they lost that Masorah and they developed.
But that Masorah ended with the Mishnah. After the Mishnah, you couldn't do anything.
Right, you think that's significant to the year 4000? You think?
But that's not the Chazanish.
Right. No. It's not a conflict. I mean, maybe the Chazanish also says that also. I'm saying, but why? Because it would fit in with the Chazanish. It's not saying anything against the Chazanish.
So why can't an Afron argue with a Rishon?
He can.
An Afron can
argue. Rav does it all the time. Ever see a Vilna Gaon? Rav Moshe did it sometimes.
It's not proven.
In other words, we just assume.
We assume
the closer you are to the Sinai, the better your understanding. But obviously,
especially like in the 19th century, Rav Chanan Spector and all there, he gives goes through a whole tshuva. Why he thinks the guy never mind Rishonim, earlier Achronim, and then at the end he says who can argue on the earlier generation and not worried about being burned by the coals, so therefore I'm not passing against them. Hundreds of thousands of times.
Yeah.
Right, but he's back down. Yeah, but there's no principle stopping him. He decided he didn't want to. He didn't feel strong. I mean, the Vilna Gaon does it all the time, and you have other Achronim. I mean, the Shagar Zayi does it all the time. I'm saying there's no principle stopping them. Obviously, you better be pretty sure you're right. You know, if you're going to take on the Rambam, you better make sure. So either you set it out to another, it depends what the Rav Yitzchak really mean. He thought he was right. He didn't want to come out and say it, but he actually thought. In fact, with Chaim, they say over the Rav Chaim Velezhin, the Talmud of the Vilna Gaon, had a Masorah that you're obligated to go against the region. In fact, if against the Shulchan Aruch, if someone's a Talmud Chacham and they know the Sugya and they think the Mechaber made a mistake in Shulchan Aruch, it's also for you to follow it. That was the Rav Chaim Velezhin tradition from the Gra. You're not Mechaber to the Shulchan Aruch. In other words, if you learn the Sugya, obviously you have to be the Vilna Gaon of Chaim Velezhin. I'm saying is there's nothing stopping, there's nothing binding. You know, Chaim has accepted the Shulchan Aruch. I'm saying, but in terms of the principle, anyway, you find it in many of the Gedolim. I mean, they don't write it, they don't say it that way. But you read the Tshuvas, they do it all the time.
I know of a bunch of times when Rav Moshe says it against an Afron, but against a Rishon.
Yeah.
I know, like a Mitzvah Pinnock, he says.
Whatever, a lot of times what they'll do is they'll find other Rishonim. I mean, they're saying, what they'll do is they'll just find, you'll find a Machoket Rishonim, this showing you.
You know? Like sometimes you get shocked. You go,
yeah, but
he writes the whole Minchas Chinuch, he says, I think he's wrong.
Right, I would say, but it's a style thing.
Did he ever do that in a region?
I mean, I think he's done it in a time. Style is if he's not going to come out and say it, he might not come out and say, I'm arguing with Antosis, but in essence, that's what he's doing. In other words, it's a Machoket Rishonim. That's what Rav Shecht always likes to say, like the Chazanish's approach that anytime if he used to be cholik, but if he used to be cholik on someone, so he used to take the later people, all the Achronim, and say, but if he used to go with them, then he used to quote the Rishonim on that. In other words, if you always find the issue of machlokas, you shouldn't be point. So, if the machlokas is Rambam or Ramban,
yeah, that's a big difference.
Yes, I'm saying, but usually
you can't find a Rishon. I like, is there a case where Rosh Hashanah says?
No, but I'm saying
the Rishon's wrong. It's one thing to say I hold like the other Rishon.
No, he says.
Yeah, there's times where he says that guy's wrong.
Doesn't
he ever do it?
Yes, we lost some of the tradition, and now we're using the principles to rediscover them, than to say we never had all of that from the beginning. We only had the principles, and we're learning out. Why is one more apikorsis than the other? Did you not say?
Rambam said it. Rambam said it.
He said it's just, I don't know what his question is, apikorsis, right? Or it's just,
he said the reason for it is because you introduced the concept of broken telephone. Once you introduce the concept of broken,
yeah, but why is that worse to say I had it, we lost it, and now let's try to rediscover it using the principle, than not having it and trying to discover it using the principle? Why is that worse?
You can't say you lost anything. It's very fundamental to lump, because then you're just going to have the broken telephone.
But why is that? We didn't explain why. Why is Ravina? Why is everyone up until the Gemara could argue with each other, and why is everyone after the Gemara can argue? Why is that the cutoff point? So Rav Moshe Soloveitchik explained to Rav's father. He discussed the question as Rav Yehuda Nasi. He codified the Mishnayot, so they were there, and then we know that they were doing the Gemara. So he quotes some different Gaon, and when exactly did he write down the Mishnayot? Like, obviously Rav Yehuda Nasi, like when they wrote down the Gemara, you know, when did he actually write down? In other words, were they learning the Mishnayot also? Were they learning the Mishnayot by heart still? So the Rav claims, the Rav Moshe Soloveitchik claims that up until Chasimas HaTalmud, everything was Torah Shabbat Peh. Everything was Peh. Once he did Chasimas HaTalmud, Then they committed everything into print. So what Rav Moshe explains is as follows. He says, why is this a cutoff point? He says, up until Ravina Rav Ashi Sof Hora, because that was the Torah Shabbat Peh Be'al Peh. That was the pure Mesorah, the way it was supposed to be, Al Peh, everything was oral. What happened after the Chasimas HaTalmud, we started learning the Torah Shabbat Peh B'Ksav. What?
I don't know if everybody understands. Ravina and Rav Ashi were the last Amari.
Right,
at the end of the Gemara.
At the end of the Gemara. So therefore, he's saying, up until the Gemara was written, everything was oral. So therefore, everything was transmitted orally. Mm-hmm. Once it was written down, so then we started transmitting the Torah Shabbat Peh B'Ksav. So Rav Moshe claims that the level of Mesorah of Al Peh is a higher level of Mesorah than Ksav. So therefore, we only have the Mesorah given over B'Ksav now in print, and therefore we have no right to argue. For instance, we have, like Rav Chaim writes, by the difference between, we know that the 24 books of Tanakh, there's Torah, Nevi'im, and Ksuvim. So we know Torah is directly God to Moshe, and then there's Nevi'im and Ksuvim. What's the difference between Nevi'im and Ksuvim? Why did some books get the cut to Nevi'im and others go to Ksuvim? And in fact, you have the same author. And some of the books went into the VM and some went into Ksuvim. So what's the criteria? So there's different opinions, but Rav Chaim writes, based on the Rambam, Amor and Nevuchim, that the Rambam writes is, Nevi'im, what's the difference between the book that got into the prophets versus the writings? That Nevi'im is, first God told over the prophecy to the Navi. The Navi gave it over to the people, and then he wrote it down. That's why Yisvatayim, he had to know it, he had to remember it. But why is it called Ksuvim? It's written down. The Navi was told that he wrote it down, and then he gave it over. So the giving over something about Peh is on a higher level of Mesorah. So that's what Rav Moshe Soloveitchik claims here. The reason why the people after the Gemara cannot argue with people before is because that's the end of the pure Mesorah of Torah Shabbat Peh, the pure Mesorah of Torah Shabbat ended, and therefore we only have the Mesorah of Torah Shabbat Ksav. That's why the cutoff point in terms of why we got it. One last point to tie into Megillah Sarus and Shavuot, this concept that there's a whole discussion, it's the Gemara in Yevamos, with Boaz and the pony Ammoni about marrying Ruth. So there's a pasuk, it says in Ruth that the pony Ammoni didn't want to marry Ruth, pen ashchet es zaram, that he's afraid that his kids, Rashi writes, his kids will become psulim. Like what it means, why? Right? Because we have a principle, we have a pasuk. Well, you have Amon Amoav Bakal Hashem. We have a pasuk that someone from Amon Amoav can enter into the assembly of God, and therefore he's worried his kids are going to be psulim. So we know we have a tradition, as the whole Gemara in Yevamos talks about, that only applies Amoni below Amonis Moav. Only applies. We have a tradition. Only applies to the male men and not to the women. So there's a whole discussion in the Gemara between Avner, Togomer, and Yevamos, that we're going back and forth over this principle. The question is, did Pony Ammoni know this principle? It was well known. Boaz made it popular. So what was Pony Ammoni, what was the machlokas between Pony Ammoni and Boaz? The Brisker Rav is a beautiful piece based on what we're saying now. Is Pony Ammoni, of course he knew about the drasha. But what? He said, yeah, right now we paskin, this basin came along and said, yeah, it applies to men, not to women. But maybe 10 years from now, the basin, using the Yud Gimel Midos, you say, wait, no, we reject you, and therefore my kids are going to be mamzer, and they won't even mean Jews. He said, that's what he's not. The question is, why is he worried about himself? He was allowed to marry her because he accepted the drasha, but he was worried about his kids. So what does Boaz say? That's what the Gemara says. It's a strange Gemara. The going back and forth, he quotes the Mishnah, then until the Gemara says, I have a Mesorah from Beis Dino Shel Shmuel Aramasi, which means, I have a halacha l'moshe misina. In other words, the point I'm already assuming this halacha was based on the Yud Gimel Midos Shah Torah. If that's the case, then every basin could change it. And then I have no right to, maybe next year they'll change the halacha, then I'll be stuck with marrying someone I can't marry. And Boaz says, no, you don't have to worry. Halachal, it's halachal Moshe Misina, and therefore it can never change. But this point is another example where we see through the evolution of Torah Shabbat Peh, you can have a different, every basin has the right to change the halacha. And in fact, during the Bayis Rishon and Bayis Sheni, they did the wine libations differently because they learned based on different psukim, they darshan how to do it differently. And that's what the Pony Ammoni was afraid of. And that's what happened, we lost that flexibility. When the Torah got put down, when the Gemara got put down into print, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter says, so to speak, the Gemara became like al chumash. What he meant is, we no longer have the flexibility. We can't argue on the Gemara is a given now. We can only argue on the Rishonim, and that Gemara is a given, and therefore it's like, you know, it's not equivalent in terms of stature, but it's saying, wait, the chumash, we can't say the chumash is wrong. We can't say the Gemara is wrong. The Gemara is right. We have to interpret and learn the Gemara, because that was, so we lost that flexibility. One of the greatness of the Torah Shabbat Peh was, and that's one of, that's why he was reluctant to put it into print, because once you put it into print, obviously ultimately he knew without putting it into print it would be forgotten, so he had to. But he was wrestling with the matter because the greatness of Torah Shabbat Peh was the Yud Gimel Midas, that every generation had a right to go and interpret the psukim and learn. And that was the Torah of every generation. That we don't have anymore.
Don't you need to be greater than...
we have the print, right, working within the print. Anyway, Gemara Megillah, you have to have a base in Gadol V'Chof, you have to work within the principles, but once you have that base, then you're able to change the halacha. That was a common thing. That's how Torah should always work. There wasn't no set, it's a dynamic.
Just on this halacha l'moshe misina thing, something occurred to me. According to the Rambam, halacha l'moshe misina makes a lot of sense to me, because Moshe is given the principles, but on top of that, there's a certain set of detailed halacha that he gets called halacha l'moshe misina. According to Rashi, why isn't everything halacha l'moshe misina? It should all be halacha l'moshe misina, because it's all given. In other words, do you hear what I'm saying?
You're saying what? Halacha
is that concept of, yeah. It should, all the details were given. So according to your story, like this story that you just said, the machlokas of Boaz and Pliny Almoni, it makes sense with the definition of the Rambam. Because he's worried that they're going to use Yud-Gimel Midos in future generations to come up with a different
right, the Rambam.
But he's saying, but it's a halakha mashiach. But
Rambam,
Rashi, the whole thing is halakha mashiach.
Right, the Rambam
details were given.
Right, the Rambam himself gives caddy. The Rambam says you cannot, even though it, you have to different gemaras, you have to enter up, but the Rambam writes, you can't argue on halakha moshe mitina. You have to
right.
do this. Even though there are gemaras, they ask on the Rambam, you know, they mm-hmm. aren't that many, but they have to cut it to
this is also one.
Yeah. Right, but the way the Brisker Rav is saying is he didn't know it was halakha
moshe. Yeah, and the Rav said that's not shaykh.
Right, you think.
That's not machlokes is halakha moshe mishina.
So, yeah. Right, that's a.
What?
Does that make sense?
I don't know.
What? Yeah, I don't, was there an answer to this? That's a good question.
No, he's just asking a difficulty on Rashi.
Yeah.
I know, I think Rashi.
Probably was being supportive of Rashi, but I just heard the whole concept of the halakha moshe mitina is fair according to the Rashi.
Because it's based on whether you guys
are talking about. There's a Gemara in Gin, a very strange machlokas at first glance, that is a machlokas, whether Rov Guf Katorah is it Torah Shebeksav or Torah Shebapeh. What's the majority of Torah? If it is it Torah Shebeksav or Torah Shebapeh? So you go to any Beis Hamedrash, you know, you see the 24 books of Tanakh, and you see all these Gemara Medrash. So what's the Shaila? So there's a Be'er Sheva. So they learn that scoop of the Machlokas when something when you use the Yud Gimel Midos, how do you view that? Is Yud Gimel Midos, does that have a din of Torah Shebeksav, or does that have a din of Torah? Or you know, that's what could be also the machlokas by what is Torah Shebeksav, what is Torah Shebapeh. But that's good for stuff you read in between the lines. If you give Momida, if you come and interpret the pasuk, is that of a din of Torah Shebeksav, or is that in, you know, that's good for the machlokas over there again, Dav Samech, whether the Torah, whether Rove Torah is Alper or Ksav. Like, the facts are there. The question is, how do we view when you learn something through the Yud Gimel Midos, does it have a din of Torah Shebeksav or a din of Torah Shabbat?
I mean, I know it's got some lesser degree.
All right.
Right, Amen. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what's
not
right?
What's left over if the Yud Gimel Midos become Torah Shebeksav, so what's left over for in the Torah Shabbat? Not much, right?
I mean, you have a lot of media, but yes, the Rambam has five categories there. You have Gzeira, Sakanas.
Have they got it?
No, I'm saying he hasn't. There's Gzeira, Sakanas, there's other, he gives five different categories he has there in terms of Torah Shabbat Peh.
Right, okay.
And the difference between Takana and Gzeira is, you know, when you can change a Gzeira, a Takana and that. But that's what we're celebrating, the Yantav Shavuos, the Yantav, in fact, that's why they point out that the Shavuos is the only Yantav where the Torah doesn't give us a date on. We have to count, okay, because we count 50 days after Sfira. But doesn't tell us, it's very unclear when we start. We machar at Shabbos, that's where the whole machlokas with Sadukim. When do we start counting Sfira? Do we take it literally? Why is it so ambiguous by Shavuos? So Dafka, they point out, because Dafka, because to show, in order to celebrate the Yantav Shavuos, you have to have the Torah Shavuot as well. The Torah Shavuot without the Torah Shavuot is a closed book. You can't open up a chumash and know what's going on. In fact, that's what they point out. Bereishis, they point out there after us. Bereishis Barakim. The Rashi writes, "Ain a pasuk el darshuni." The four levels of pshat in a pasuk is the pardates, pshuto, the remez, drush, and sod. So you think if the Torah is beginning, begin with something. If you're building a house, just build the foundation. You work yourself up. You start a pasuk with drush. No, that's the same issue. Don't think for a second when you open up this book you can understand Pshuto. You have to realize right away, especially save a Bereishis, where people think they do understand, that you need to... By Yikra, everyone knows you don't understand, you need Torah about that. Bereishis is the most dangerous. You think you understand... Oh, it's a bunch of stories. Okay, I'll say whatever I want on that. But when you open up the... But that's the issue throughout, and that's the issue of the Shavuos that was celebrating not only the Torah Shabbat, but the essence of education is you can't separate the Torah Shebeksav and the Torah Shebeksav, as Rav Hirsch puts it, that the Torah Shebeksav is like you're at the shiur, you're hearing the Lo Sasa Kol Melacha, And the whole Gemara Shabbat is writing down, Moshe writing down the notes of everything, what exactly was said about Peh. So really, you know, the two go together. That's the whole discussion also. This whole discussion we began with about the status of Halacha Moshe, we could give another share of that another time, the difference between a Din Min HaTorah versus a Din Halacha Moshe, which is also a Din Min HaTorah, but why this distinction between, which we do find, between Halacha Moshe Misinai and a Din Min HaTorah, in terms of Suffolk and also other areas, Onshin, you know, we could speak at another time.
You want to sit down with Mizrahi Bayah?
I believe so.
Yeah. So, we're hoping